September 30th, Pigskin Ken Football Podcast. I'm sorry, I got a baby taking a bottle right here in my lap, trying to get this done before the noon kick. So first things first, Friday night action. We had Louisville versus NC State. I told you it would be a battle, a fist fight, a war. It was 13-10. Louisville took it. It was 10-0 Wolfpack at the half. Louisville couldn't do anything on offense. NC State had shut Jawar Jordan down. Plummer wasn't doing very well in the passing game. And it was looking good for NC State for a long time. But once the third quarter rolled around, Louisville started to get things going on offense. And basically, they just started chucking the ball deep down the sideline to their receivers. And to their credit, Louisville's receivers were beating the NC State corners for a lot of those jump balls. The game really started to turn on a deep end zone pass to Chris Bell, who came down with it. He and the defender both had good hands on the football, but the tie goes to the offensive player. Then there was a targeting play where an NC State linebacker was ejected. Bad luck play. I mean, it was definitely targeting per the rules, but he definitely had no malintent on the tackle. And then finally, there was another end zone touchdown taken away from Louisville. After watching the replay many times, I mean, 99 times out of 100, I think that that's going to be ruled a touchdown, even though the call on the field was an incomplete pass. I had a feeling the refs were going to stick with it just because of the unfortunate break that NC State got on those other two plays. But really, all three plays should have went Louisville's way per the rules, but they did not give them the touchdown after the other two calls that were very close, admittedly, went Louisville's way. They decided to rule the last touchdown in the end zone incomplete. Anyway, Louisville took the lead by three on a 53-yard Brock Travelstead field goal that honestly would have been good from about 58. He beat the heck out of that ball and put Louisville in front with about 5 minutes to go, and they were able to run out a lot of the clock and come up with another stop or two to ice the game. Now, I did not get any eyes on Utah-Oregon State. It did look like it followed the script of so many early season Utah games. They always take one loss early in the season, usually one you don't really see coming. Oregon State was favored in this game, but I definitely didn't see them pitching a shutout till 5 minutes left, which they did do in this one. So it was never really in doubt. Utah could not get anything going on offense. Nate Johnson was 8 of 23 passing before he was replaced by Bryson Barnes. They couldn't get anything going on the run game. Really, the only player who really showed out offensively on either side was Silas Bolden, who was able to catch 6 balls for 100 yards and a touchdown, and then he also had 2 carries for 53 yards and another touchdown. So he was the star. Oregon State gets a real big win over a top 10 Utah team, keeps themselves in the pack title hunt, and, you know, bounces back from that surprising Washington State loss. I would call it a surprising loss. Maybe you wouldn't, but I thought Oregon State would be very good this year, and I wasn't really sold on Washington State as a contender in the conference.
Let's look at CUSA, Louisiana Tech 24, UTEP 10. This was our first loss on the picks. We had the over here. 4 minutes in, I see that the score is 14-0 Louisiana Tech, and I'm like, we're cruising to an over here. But I guess Tech got comfortable enough in their lead that they realized they didn't need any more points. And UTEP wasn't doing enough on their end to make it happen either. So this was a bad pick, I guess, ultimately. But when I look at the stats, both teams just were so bad on third down, and that's what really killed this bet. Louisiana Tech was 3 of 11 on third down. UTEP was 3 of 17. And with Louisiana Tech getting out 14-0, they never felt pressure to really try anything exotic and put more points up. So maybe that early 14-0 cushion actually hurt us as far as the bets go on this one. And then we have the last game of Friday night, BYU 35, Cincinnati 27. Emory Jones played a good game. Really, Cincinnati outgained him. It was at 498 to 295 in yardage. I've always said yardage is kind of like an overrated stat. It's what we use in football, but really the advanced stats are a lot more important than yardage because yards in a vacuum mean nothing. I guess really the place since he lost this game was in the turnovers. They had two, BYU had none, but didn't really get eyes on it. Am happy that BYU got it. Cashing on our BYU moneyline play has the pod now at 3-1 on picks, with a 1.77 plus unit return. So doing good, off to a nice start. Going to give you a few more picks for the early action today. I'm sorry, didn't get to get into every game like I sometimes can. So let's look at our picks for this week. First, I'm going to take an under 53.5. Clemson at Syracuse. Clemson's still not showing me enough on offense. I do like Rocky Long leading Syracuse's defense. They are 4-0. They will be feisty. They are in the Carrier Dome. So hopefully Clemson plays a little close to the vest. If this is a Clemson blowout, I think it could still go under the total as they will likely just run the ball, eat clock, squeeze the game. If Syracuse wins, I feel like it probably also would have to be a low-scoring affair. It's kind of hard to envision a scenario where this game gets off the rails, maybe outside of Garrett Schrader getting hurt. We like the under 53.5 here. Next, I'm going to take Texas A&M laying 5.5 points against Arkansas in Arlington. Kind of spoke to this a little in the last pod, but I think Arkansas kind of really emptied the whole clip against LSU. I really do like Arkansas's coaching staff a lot, but I think that they're just going to be a little depleted for this one. I think A&M, their culture seems strangely good after that Auburn win. I think that Petrino is dialing up some good offense, and it looked like their defense finally found its way against Auburn. They looked so bad against Miami, but against Auburn, they looked really good. So we'll see. KJ Jefferson, definitely a better quarterback than Peyton Thorne. This pick could go awry a couple different ways, but I definitely think A&M has more talent than Arkansas. I think they're hungry. I think their culture is better than it's been in a while. So I'm going to take the Aggies laying under a touchdown, 5.5 on this one. Next, I'm going to take a first half number here, spread. It's Colorado getting 14 in the first half against USC. Now, Colorado, we know they have some stars, some major star power. Some might be missing this game, but they have the headliners. That's what brings in the media frenzy. That's what gets the eyes on the game. We know USC's got it in spades as well. It's going to be a great matchup. Shedeur Sanders against Caleb Williams. Points should be aplenty. The hope here is that, you know, Colorado got dusted really bad against Oregon. They looked just awful, like they didn't belong on the same field. I think the Pac-12 knows what they have in Colorado this year. It's a lightning rod of clicks and downloads and ratings, and I don't think they want to see that just go up in smoke 2 weeks in a row. I think Colorado needs a gritty effort. They need to make this entertaining at least for a while. I do think they lack a lot of depth, and I think that USC, given a long enough game, is going to prove its dominance. I think they would pull away. That's why I was a little afraid of the 22.5 full game spread. So instead, I'm going to go with the first half. I'm going to have Colorado keeping it interesting for a while, keeping the TV sets on to this game until maybe late in the third quarter. I've got Colorado plus 14. Last play is more of a just trend historical college football play here. I am taking the under again, under 54 in Purdue and Illinois. Now, the logic here is that Ryan Walters was at Illinois last year. He knows that team very well. Likewise, Bielema knows his team very well. So I think that in situations in football, when there is a high degree of understanding or knowledge in the opponent, that tends to help the defense more than the offense. Think about like a wide receiver and a corner trying to cover him. What makes it tougher for the corner in that matchup is that the wide receiver knows his route. He knows where he's going, whereas the corner has to anticipate or guess the route and react to it. So in situations where there's a little bit more knowledge, when you know kind of the playbook, the plays, the route tree, the opponent's tendencies, that tends to help the defense a little more than usual. This is why in college football spring games, a lot of times you see kind of lower scoring, defensive dominating affairs. The same thing you can see in NFL football when you see divisional opponents meet for the second time of the season. Like when you see the Cowboys and the Giants meet the second time, or when you see the Colts and the Titans meet later in the year after already playing once before. So I am going to go on just the hunch of here, the kind of in-depth, intimate knowledge of each other's program. I'm going to anticipate a defensive struggle of respect between the Illini and the Boilermakers. We're going to go with the under 54 as our last play for Saturday. And like I said, in future weeks, I will try to cover Saturday action a little before. It's just too much for me to do it all this morning, especially when I got my four little kids. So hope you enjoyed it. Hopefully, let's see, we're 3-1 coming in today. Hopefully, we're 7-1 when I come back tomorrow on Sunday on the Pigskin Ken Football Podcast. Peace. Enjoy the football.